Thank you, April. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to speak today, and also to my co-authors for all their input in this presentation. I should mention, I guess I'm an animal nutritionist. I'm not a soil scientist. And so many of the things that Mario was discussing that seem so disgusting to him are things I've been doing routinely for the last 35 years. So we have a little bit different way of looking at things. First of all, as a brief overview, I would like to give a little background into the beef cattle system in the United States or in North America. Greenhouse gas emissions from the cattle industry, factors that affect those greenhouse gas emissions, and then if I have time, something about the progress we've made in the last 30 years, and then some conclusions. The North American beef cattle system is broken up into about four or five sectors. We have the cow-calf sector, which is primarily forage-based. Animals stay on forage most throughout the year and are supplemented often during the winter or when forage is short, in short stock. Also, calves are normally weaned at about 205 days of age, and they've taken from the mama cow. Many of them then go to a stocker program, which again is primarily forage-based with some supplementation in that case. Anywhere from 0 to 180 days will the animal be on this stocker phase before they go to a feed yard in many cases. And of course, the feed yard system is based primarily on grain and the feeding of byproducts. And in the last 20 years, that has changed dramatically. Again, an animal will normally stay in a feedlot from anywhere from 100 to 200 days, and they'll go to slaughter when they weigh 550 to 700 kilograms. Also, dairy cattle, a lot of the cold dairy cows and unused heifers or dairy bulls end up in the beef sector, and about 12% of our beef supply actually comes from the dairy sector. So we can say that the beef cattle system is actually a grass, grain, and byproduct-based system. It's not just a grain-based system like it is, say, in primarily the monogastric species. Typically, you will hear that cattle in a feedlot have a feed conversion of about 8 to 1. Well, that data is about 30 years old. If you've got a conversion of 8 to 1, you need to fire your nutritionist right away. Any more, our feed conversions are more like 5.5 to 7 kilograms of feed to gain 1 kilogram of weight. Now, if you look at just the grain portion of that diet, that conversion is actually more like 2.2 to 5, again, depending upon the diet. And then if you look at the lifetime of that animal, from the time it's born until the time it goes to slaughter, the lifetime grain conversion is about 1.1 to 2.5 kilograms of grain per kilogram of slaughter weight for those animals. We also have a number of greenhouse gas emission sources in the beef system. Of course, we have cattle, they're a major part of it because of enteric fermentation. In feed yards, we may have manure stockpiles. We have the feedlot pen surface, retention ponds. Obviously, we have the soils and the forages the animal consumed, as well as equipment, vehicles, and the use of fossil fuels. As far as those emissions from cattle, greenhouse gas emissions, the enteric and metabolic emissions of methane and carbon dioxide, primarily enteric methane. This is a common occurrence in all ruminants. I actually had a 30-minute conversation with a guy one time, refused to believe that elephants or bison or buffalo produced methane because they were 100% natural and only cattle produced methane. But all ruminants produce methane in the forestomach or in the rumen. We also have metabolic carbon dioxide production, again, which is a typical part of metabolism of the animal. In general, that's about equivalent to the carbon dioxide that's used up or consumed by the forages and the grain that the animal consumes. We have, again, as this, the previous speaker mentioned, we have emissions from manure, methane, that is highly dependent upon conditions, as was mentioned. But it appears in feedlots, it appears to be very minor. Emission. But it can be significant from lagoons, especially, for example, in dairies. Although most feed yards do not have lagoons. We may have retention ponds, but it's not lagoons. Also, nitrous oxide. In feedlot situation, nitrous oxide seems to be the primary greenhouse gas emission from the manure system. And that's primarily based on the global warming potential of 310 times carbon dioxide. And of course, then we have the others like the production of feed and the use of fossil fuels. Something about the greenhouse gas emissions from the cattle industry. In the United States, according to EPA, these are not the most recent figures from EPA, but about 8% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the United States come from agriculture. Of those, about 25%, or 2% of the total greenhouse gas emissions, come from the beef cattle population in the United States. To put that in some perspective, these are estimates of the greenhouse gas emissions from the bison herd in 1860 versus the modern-day cattle herd of beef cattle and dairy cattle. Now, and this is the term, this is estimating the bison herd at 30, 50, or 75 million bison. I don't know what the right number is. The number I hear a lot is 60 million. And if it's 60 million, you look at that, that's almost exactly the same as the beef cattle and dairy cattle herds in the modern United States as far as enteric methane emissions. So as a net, we really have had very little net increase in enteric methane emissions in the last 140, 150 years. Again, greenhouse gas emissions from the North American sector, about 70% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from the cow herd. About 17% come from stocker cattle, and about 13% come from the feedlots. So about 80% of our total greenhouse footprint in the beef industry comes from animals that are on grass. Again, the primary emission, about 60% of our emissions are enteric methane, and about 21% are from manure, and about 19% are from fossil fuels and secondary losses. So if we do a life cycle analysis, essentially from birth to the farm gate, typical bovine, and that's going to, from the farm gate, I mean to the slaughterhouse, the emissions are about 6 to 19 kilograms of carbon dioxide per, equivalent per kilogram of slaughter weight, or 10 to 32 kilograms per kilogram of carcass weight. And this is based on about 6 different life cycle analyses done in the U.S. and in Canada. As far as factors that affect greenhouse gas emissions, again, from several life cycle analyses, the stocker phase, we lose about 15 kilograms of carbon dioxide per day. During the finishing phase, that's about 13 kilograms per day. Now, considering that an animal on a stocker phase is gaining less than 2 pounds per day, or about 0.8 kilograms, whereas an animal in the feedlot is gaining about 3.5 pounds, or 1.6 kilograms per day, the carbon dioxide equivalent emissions for a stocker animal are about twice per unit of average daily gain as that from the feedlot cattle, about 18 versus 8. Now, in a typical situation in the United States, during the winter, forage quality drops off, and we go from a high-quality forage to a low-quality forage, so we supplement cows with protein during that stage. This is a study we just completed where we fed animals 4% protein forage, so a very low-quality forage, and we supplemented with either cottonseed meal, which is very typical in the southern Great Plains, or with dried distiller's grains, which again is becoming more and more popular. And what we saw is when we did that, we increased the total enteric methane production from about 170 grams per day up to about 190 or 205 grams per day. However, when we put that on a percentage, because the animals increased their forage intake, if we put this on a per unit of forage intake or per unit of dry matter intake or energy intake, we went from about 9.8% of energy intake down to about 7% of gross energy intake lost as enteric methane when we provided a protein supplement. Now, the reason we had a lower emissions with the distiller's grains than the cottonseed meal is probably because of the added fat in the distiller's grains, and I'll mention that a little bit more. Again, what we saw is as we increased the amount of forage consumed by the animal or increased the digestibility of that forage, we decreased greenhouse gas emissions as a percentage of gross energy intake, which is normally termed YM in most cases. Again, if we look at the carbon footprint, again, some common results. I won't go through all these, but essentially in a grass-fed system, we're losing about 15 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per kilogram of hot carcass weight, whereas in a system where the animal goes into a feedlot and is finished in the feedlot, that system is down below 11 kilograms of CO2 equivalent per kilogram of hot carcass weight. And how they go in a feedlot, whether it's directly as calves or as yearlings, will change that. As far as some dietary factors affecting greenhouse gas emissions, just probably some general rules of thumb. As we increase the starch in the diet, we decrease methane emissions as a percentage of energy intake. And also as we increase the availability of that starch, or the digestibility of that starch, we decrease methane emissions. Just the reverse of that, as we increase the roughage in the diet, we increase the methane emissions from the animals, especially as a percentage of gross energy intake. When we increase fat in the diet, let me get my arrow to work here. For every 1% increase in dietary fat, we decrease enteric methane emissions about 5%. Now, of course, you have to remember, ruminant animals are very sensitive to fat. So we cannot feed a diet that's more than about 7% fat, or we really start messing up the fermentation in the rumen. So normally here we're talking about probably at 3% added fat in the diet is about the maximum we can do in the typical situation. Ionophores such as monensin also decrease methane emissions, but apparently that appears to be transitory, and we get about a 20% drop, but that only lasts for about 30 days. In dairy cows, it seems to be almost permanent, but in beef cattle, it seems to be transitory. And as the previous speaker mentioned, of course, we have factors affecting manure greenhouse gas emissions. Essentially, since methane is coming from carbohydrates that are fermented in the feces, the less carbohydrate we have in the feces, the less fermentable carbohydrate we have in the feces, the less methane is going to be produced from that feces. Also, manure nitrous oxide, again, in situations, this may be our major greenhouse gas from manure, and that's highly dependent upon nitrogen excretion and weather and pen surface conditions. To kind of give you some actual data on some of this, this is a study from Canada, Karen Boschman in Canada, where they fed a steam roll barley diet versus the dry roll corn diet, and what they saw is with the barley, this is the finishing diet, contains about 80% barley or 80% corn, that actually with corn, we had about a 25% decrease in enteric methane production compared to barley. It goes back, corn's higher in starch and lower in fiber than barley is the primary reason. In much of the United States, we steam flake our grain in feedlots. That's to increase the digestibility of the grain. There on the right, that steam flake corn looks a little bit like post toasties. If it's done really well, it does look like post toasties. This is not very good steam flake corn right there, the picture. And this is some dry roll corn, which is typically used in the northern Great Plains of the U.S. What we see is that when we feed steam flake corn versus dry roll corn, we actually reduce methane emissions from the animal by about 25%. And as a percent of gross energy, from about 3% down to about 2.5% of gross energy intake. For a reminder, 3% is what IPCC uses for feedlot cattle. I'm going to summarize this very rapidly. Now, when we steam flake corn versus dry roll corn, we use additional fossil fuel because it takes natural gas to fuel the boiler to make the steam. Although I was in Brazil last year and they had two guys over there with chainsaws and they were cutting up old pallets and they were using wood to fuel their boiler at that feedlot in Brazil. But we don't normally use that here in the U.S. But when we steam flake corn, we increase our feed efficiency by 10 to 15%. We decrease our dry matter and grain intake by 10 to 15% to get to the same endpoint. We decrease enteric methane by 20 to 25%. We increase the digestibility of organic matter and starch, which means we decrease the amount of total solids and digestible solids that are in the manure. and to decrease the amount of starch in the manure. We actually decrease the carbon footprint by 8 to 18% when we steam flake our corn. Again, here's an example. As we increase the roughage in a finishing diet, we increase the amount of methane produced. And April's standing up over here telling me I've got 5 minutes. So this is one thing I wanted to mention. On the left here, this is the high grain diet. This is the diet we probably fed typically throughout the United States 10 years ago. 75% corn, 7% roughage, some added fat, and other ingredients. This on the right is high byproducts. This is typically more what we're feeding today. We're feeding less corn, but we're feeding a lot of byproducts, such as distiller's grains and corn gluten feed. Very quick, I'm going to skip over these. Essentially, I wanted to talk about the effect of distiller's grains on greenhouse gas emissions. This is one thing the previous speaker, Mary O, was talking about here. As we increase the amount of distiller's grains in the diet, we don't affect the amount of fecal nitrogen very much, but we have a significant increase in the amount of urinary nitrogen that's excreted. So when we use distiller's grains in the diet, we're reducing the amount of corn we feed, but we increase our manure production by 10 to 30%. We increase affect methane production depending upon the diet. We increase nitrogen excretion. So the actual effects of distiller's grain on the carbon footprint are highly variable. They depend on the amount of concentration of distillers in the diet, the grain processing method we use, the dietary fat supplementation, the roughage source, and what we use as the carbon footprint of distiller's grains. In the last 30 years, we've developed a lot of new technologies through diet formulation, grain processing, and different feed additives that we can use. And in that same time, we've increased carcass weight in cattle by 20 to 30%. We've increased weight gain by up to 50%, improved feed efficiency by 15 to 25%, decreased manure excretion, and we've decreased greenhouse gas and ammonia production per kilogram of hot carcass weight. So in conclusion, I think we can say that the cow herd is the 800-pound gorilla when it comes to the greenhouse gas emissions from the U.S. or North American cattle herd. This is primarily due to the low reproductive rate. A cow produces one calf per year, so she reproduces her weight less than one time in a year. A sow reproduces her own weight 20 or 30 times in 1 year. A hen reproduces her weight 200 times in 1 year. So this low reproductive rate is a big part of that. Enteric methane production in the modern beef herd is about equivalent to the 1860 wildlife herds in North America. The carbon footprint per unit of production is lower for grain-fed beef than or cattle than it is for grass-finished animals. And in reality, enteric methane production in feedlot situations may be near the practical minimum. Methane production in a rumen is a way for that population and that animal to get rid of reducing equivalents. If we take that away, we may actually cause other problems with fermentation within the rumen. Although it requires extra fossil fuel, increased grain processing may actually decrease the carbon footprint. Feeding distiller's grains is going to have variable effects on the carbon footprint depending upon a number of factors. We made a lot of progress in the last 30 years. Again, the carbon footprint is going to vary depending upon the dietary inputs and management practices used. And it looks like reducing enteric methane production of pastured cattle or manure nitrous oxide emissions of feedlot cattle may be our most opportune or practical avenues to decrease the carbon footprint of the North American beef herd. Thank you. Yeah, I'm laughing, aren't I? No, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what the feed conversion is for rabbit. I have never eaten rabbit. I don't know what it tastes like compared to beef. Okay. In the life cycle, most of the LCAs that have been conducted with beef are assuming the soil carbon, there's no change in soil carbon. If you go in and make some assumptions on that, depending on some of the assumptions you make, you end up kind of equal, or if the grain is still slightly ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.